What happens, Kinalach, if you see somebody doing an Aveda and you don't stop them? It's just like you also are taking part in doing the Aveda. It's like you're doing the Aveda yourself. Now, the reason I'm telling you this, of course, you're going to see what happens later in the story. It's not just a story, it's something that happened in Tanakh, Kinalach. And of course, we know that everything that it says in the Tanakh happened exactly like we're telling you it happened. The boys say, is this a true story? Of course it's a true story. Because it's in Tanakh. Everything in the Chumash, the Nevi'im, and the Ksuvim, Kinalach, is Teresh HaBeksav. And exactly the way it's written, that's the way it happened. Then after Gehazi went home and put the stuff in his house, he goes to the base medrash, he goes to the shul, where Elisha is teaching his students a shir in Teda. And he was teaching them about the Shmeina Shratzim, the 8 unclean insects. And now all of a sudden Gehazi comes into the shul. And Elisha looks over there. Gehazi, where have you been? You've been away for quite a long time. Where are you coming from? Oh, no place special. Just, you know, outside. You know, I was outside. And Kinalach, Elisha knew something was wrong. And Elisha had Ruach HaKodesh. And Elisha knew exactly what had happened, Kinalach. And he calls over Gehazi. And he says, where were you? I know where you were. You ran after Naaman. And he gave you silver and suits. And you made Achil Hashem. I had sworn to Hashem I will not accept anything. And now you say I will accept. You're making me look like I, chas v'shalem, told a lie and went against a promise to Hashem. And then you're making it look like I did something and I need money for it instead of Hashem doing it, and I want to show that this is something from Hashem and I'm not interested in the money. And of course, Gehazi, Kinalach, was very embarrassed because this was true. And Elisha says to Gehazi, you're jealous of what Naaman has? You want what Naaman has? You want to take from Naaman what he has? Then you'll get it. You'll get exactly what you want. The same way that Naaman had Tzeiras, that's also what you're going to get, Tzeiras. You, and not only you, your family also, your 3 sons, who also like you, were happy that you had the money and the suits. And immediately after Elisha said this, all of a sudden Gehazi looks at his arms and he looks down at his body and he sees the white boo-boos of Tzaras covering his body. Oh, look, Tzaras, it's covering me. Hoivei. And Gehazi goes home and he goes in the door, and as soon as he goes in the door, he sees his 3 sons screaming, hey, Dad, look at us. Look what we're covered with, the boo-boos. Hey, we're covered with Tzaras. And the sons also were covered with Tzaras. But Kinalach, regular Tzaras goes away. There's a way to get rid of it. The Tzaras that came upon Gehazi and his 3 sons never healed. It stayed on their bodies. And this is a punishment for swearing to Hashem false, in a false way, when it wasn't true. The Alter Rebbe is buried in a town in Russia called Chaditch. And over the caver of the Alter Rebbe is a little building, an oihel, like the Fideke Rebbe has. Now, buried next to the Alter Rebbe is one of his daughters, and her name was Freidke. Freidke passed away, and she was buried next to the Alter Rebbe. And over both the Alter Rebbe's caver and Freidke's caver is a cover made out of velvet, a very fine material. A beautiful velvet cover covers both of them, like a special kind of a blanket covering both kfarim, probably it's covered for the kever. And over there are candles burning. People go to the oil to daven of the Alter Rebbe. They burn candles. And there's Tehillim and Minor Lashon, a little sefer that we say by the kever of a tzaddik. And Pushkis. And there's a man who takes care of these things, like a shamish who takes care of the oil. This was a long time ago. He made sure the Tehillim were on the shelf, and the Minor Lashon was on the shelf, and the Pushkis, he put the money where it has to belong, and he took care of the cover, that it should be nice, because once in a while it gets dusty, and he takes care of the candles. And also there's oil candles, like in Hanukkah, we have a bowl with oil, with wicks, he takes care of that, and cleaning it. And he says, Tehillim the whole day, it's a halakha place. And it's a big schus to be the shamish of the oil. And this is a story that happened one time, by the oil, of the Alter Rebbe. One time, a lady came, and she starts to daven and say Tehillim by the oil of the Alter Rebbe. She looked like a lady who was very, very wealthy. She was dressed very beautifully. She did not look like the regular lady. She looked like a very special, very, very wealthy lady. And she was crying and she was crying, and something was very, very wrong. Now, many times people go and they daven by the kever of a tzaddik, by the grave of a tzaddik, because it's a very halik place. And many times there's problems and they cry. But the shamish could see that something was especially, especially terrible going on. And he felt so bad. And he just asked the lady, is there anything I can do for you? Is there anything I can do for you? And the woman said, I don't think so. But I'll tell you what's wrong. Sometimes it helps to talk a thing out, what's bothering you. And she said, a few weeks ago, I felt something in my eye. My eye was bothering me. And it started bothering me more and more, until I felt something was like inside of my eye, and I was not able to see so good. So finally I went to the doctor, and the doctor looked into my eye, and he said, there's something growing in there that should not be growing in there. Sometimes, Rahman al-Aslan, there's something growing in a person, something kind of a thing, that they have to cut it out. Or else if they leave it in there, it's a big danger for his life. The doctor said, this is such a serious thing, such a dangerous thing, that for sure, you have to go to the hospital, there has to be an operation, a special operation. And this thing growing inside of your eye has to be cut out. But it's such an operation that if it works, then it'll be very, very good. And hopefully we can save your eye and your life. But if it does not work, then you'll have to lose your eye and you'll not be able to see out of that eye anymore. And chas v'shalom, if we let it grow in there without taking it out, so you'll be able to see for a while, but it's going to grow more and more, until even when we make the operation, it's not going to help your eyes, because it's going to take away your whole life. So you can understand it's a very serious operation. And the woman said, she's so afraid to make the operation, because the doctor said it's very likely that she's going to lose her eye, because the thing is already growing a lot. And of course, nobody wants that to happen. And she says, to not make the operation, then of course, I'm not going to lose just my eyes, I'm going to lose my life. So anyway it goes, it's just so scary. Now the shamish of the oil, the gabay of the oil, the one who takes care of the oil, I guess you call him the shamish. The shamish, for some reason, got the feeling to tell the woman this. He said to her, put your finger into the oil of the lamp, like the candle that's burning with the oil. put your finger into the oil. And then with your finger that's covered with oil, smear it on the cover that's over the Alter Rebbe's grave and Friedrich's grave. And there's dust that's in the velvet. It's kind of dusty. Smear that together and then put it on your eye. Now, of course, you know, it sounds a little bit ridiculous, but the woman was so subrachin. And the shamish of the oil was speaking from his heart. Now, why ever he was saying it, who knows? But he told her to do it. She went over to the candle, she dipped her finger in, she made it oily, and then she smeared it on the cover, and she got dust together with the oil, and she rubbed it on her eye. And he says, Davish is a halfen. Hashem should help you. And she went on saying her tillim, and she went on crying. Later on, she went into her wagon. There was a wagon driver with a fancy wagon with beautiful horses, because this was a very wealthy woman. And she left. A few weeks went by, and of course, the shamish did not see her. He didn't know what happened to her. Who knows what happened? If she had the operation, if it worked, if she lived, or chas shalom not, who knows? All of a sudden, one day, a few days later, the same beautiful wagon pulls up in front of the oil. And the woman gets out, and the driver gets down, and he takes these big boxes from the back of the wagon, and he carries the boxes to the shamish and the oil, and the woman is smiling, and of course he sees that she has both of her eyes, and she says, look, I brought a gift for the oil, that you should be able to use this here. And the driver lifts out of the boxes big, big jugs of olive oil that they used to burn in the candles. I want to give this that you should be able to use them in the candles, to burn the candles here, or whoever needs it should be able to have the olive oil. And she was so happy, she was such besimcha. And she says, I've got to tell you what happened. The day that I left, the day that I was davening here, I left and I went back home. And I had to see the doctor the next day. And when I went to the doctor and he checked my eye, all of a sudden he got very surprised and he said, you know, it's very strange, the thing that's growing in your eye seems to have gotten smaller, like it's going away, because it was much bigger last time. How does your eye feel? She says, it feels better. I woke up this morning, it felt better, but a little bit better. He says, you know what, come back tomorrow. Let's not make the operation right away. Come back tomorrow. She came back the next day. Her eye was feeling better. She goes back to the doctor. He looks at her and he says, look, I can't explain it. The thing that's in your eye is even getting smaller. How do you feel today? She says, I feel much better. I'm able to see fine and I don't feel the pain in my eye. He says, look, there's no reason to cut that thing out if it's getting smaller. I can't explain it. He brought in other doctors. He told them what's happening. They said, this is very strange because this kind of a thing that grows always gets bigger and bigger and you have to cut it out. We can't explain why it's getting smaller and smaller. Kenelach, after about a week, it was hardly even there. And after about 2 weeks, the thing disappeared completely. And it went away. And the doctor said to the lady, go home, there's no reason to ever make an operation. We have no idea what made it go away. It must be some kind of a miracle. And she even told the doctors what happened, what she put on it. She said, doctors, the only thing I could explain is something that I smeared on it. They said, you went to another doctor? No, I didn't go to a doctor. I went to the grave of the Alter Rebbe, and over there, the man that takes care of the grave, he told me to smear oil with dust on my eye, the dust from the cover of the grave, and that's what I did. And of course, the doctors just shook their head. They said, we can't figure out why that should make something go away like this. And of course, she said, but I davened. It's only the koyach of a tzaddik, the koyach of the Alter Rebbe. And Kenelach, the thing went away. She never had to make the operation. And out of the feeling of thanks to Hashem that he helped her, she brought the oil to the kever, and that is the maaseh from the grave of the Alter Rebbe. This is a story about sleeping, how much you should sleep. Now, there's two ways. Some people think the less you sleep, the better it is, because then you'll be awake, always doing good things. Like, remember I told you about Napoleon? I'll tell you quickly again. There was a big king named Napoleon, the king of France, the emperor. And he used to sleep 2 hours a night. And the rest of the night he's up. Just 2 hours a night. He's sleeping. And they said, Napoleon, you're the king. You can do anything you want. Sleep a whole night. What do you have to be up the whole night? You only sleep 2 hours. You're Napoleon. Do whatever you want. He says, because when I'm asleep, I don't feel how geschmack it is to be Napoleon. It's very geschmack to be Napoleon. If I'm asleep, I don't feel that. So the Yidden heard this story, and they used it out for Kedusha, because everything a Yid he sees and hears, you have to learn something from. So a Yid says like this, it's so geschmack to be a Yid. If you're sleeping, how do you feel how geschmack it is to be? You don't feel how geschmack it is to be if you're asleep. So if you're awake, you feel how geschmack it is to be. So how can you sleep? Okay. So there's one inyan, you sleep a little bit, and you're up the rest of the time, you know, Torah and mitzvahs, and being a Yid. But there's another way to look at it also. Of course, each thing has its way that's right. Nothing is just right all the time for everybody. You have to understand, you know, how it's right and how there's different ways that are also right. The Torah is like a diamond. It says, Shivim Panim LaTorah, 70 faces. How many faces do you have? You have one face, right? You know how many faces the Torah has? 70 faces. Now, did you ever see a diamond? What makes a diamond shine? If you look very closely, it's not just like one side. The diamond is cut in many, many different ways, and each way is very nice and smooth, but each way is facing a little bit different. Did you see that on a diamond? You know, a diamond is cut, and every side shines, but each side is a little bit different than the other side. Now imagine a diamond with 70 cuts and 70 sides and 70 faces, and it shines so beautiful. Now, if it only had one side, would it shine so beautifully? No. Same thing, Kinalach. If you say one thing in Torah, it shines. But it doesn't mean that's the only thing in the Torah, and that's the only way to understand, like sleeping. I said one story about sleeping about Napoleon. It doesn't mean that every Jew has to sleep 2 hours a night. And it doesn't mean that everybody has to be like Napoleon. It means that for that story, there's a certain shining that comes out from that story. And certain times, you know, a Yid has to be up and not sleep. And if he starts complaining, oh, I'm so tired, I want to go to sleep, but he knows that now to be a Yid, he has to be up, he shouldn't complain, he'll be not like Napoleon. There's a certain mila of being awake and not sleeping. But it doesn't mean that every night you should only sleep 2 hours. It doesn't mean that. Now there's another story. The 4-hour tzaddik and the 8-hour tzaddik. This is what I'm going to tell you now. Once there was a certain yid talking to another yid. Both tzaddikim, both talmidei chachamim. And one says to the other, you know, I sleep only 4 hours a night. And I heard that you sleep 8 hours a night. I'm in my bed 4 hours a night, and you're in your bed 8 hours a night. So he says, just think if you were like me, and instead of sleeping 8 hours, you slept only 4 hours, and the other 4 hours you were not sleeping, you'd be awake. Just think how much more Torah you could learn. So maybe you should do like my way, and only sleep 4 hours a night. Wouldn't that be much better? Wouldn't you learn more Torah? Now it makes sense, right? 4 more hours of learning. And the other tzaddik just smiled. And he says, yes, I heard about you that you sleep only 4 hours a night and I sleep 8 hours a night. And I was going to tell you like this. Just think, if you went to sleep for 8 hours a night instead of 4 hours a night, just think how much more Torah you would learn. If you didn't spend those 4 hours extra learning and you're tired and your body needs more sleep, just think, if you slept 8 hours and you got more rest and your mind was more clear and you could think better, just think how much more Torah you would learn and how much better you would learn the Torah. Now there's two ways to look at it, see? One way, you're up late, and because you're up, you're not sleeping, you get more done. Another way of looking at it is that if you're up late and you're tired, maybe you're getting less done. And if you're very well rested and your mind is clear and you have a lot of koyach, so in a little time, you can even get more done. You understand? It says in the Gemara, now listen to this, this is very interesting. It says the first Hasidim, before davening, they got ready for an hour to daven. Then they davened for an hour. Then they didn't leave the shul right away after davening. They didn't run out. After davening, they stayed an extra hour just to finish things and say special things after the davening. Now, it doesn't say over there if it was Shachris or Minchin Ma'ariv. It seems they did this every time they davened. Now, if they went and got ready for davening an hour, if they went and got ready for davening for an hour before Shachris, and they davened for an hour, and they stayed extra in shul saying Tehillim and learning different things after, how many hours is that? 3 hours. And let's say for Mincha, they came to shul an hour early, and they got ready for davening Mincha. And they davened for an hour Mincha. And they got, and then after Mincha, they said special things after Mincha and learned. That's 6 hours. And let's say for Ma'ariv, they came an extra hour to shul before, getting ready for Ma'ariv. They davened for a whole hour, and afterwards they didn't learn. They didn't leave. They learned and said things. 9 hours a day just on davening. So the Gemara asks, if they're davening for 9 hours a day, what about the Torah they're learning? They have very little time to learn Torah. And what about working? They have to work to make money for their families. They'll only have a little time to work. How could they make a living for their families? How could they learn? So you know what the Gemara says? The Torah had a special bracha, and the Parnassah had a special bracha. When they learned Torah, for the little time they learned Torah, they learned so much and they remembered everything. They didn't forget. And if they went to their store and opened it up for an hour, all of a sudden it got full of people and everybody is spending money and buying things. And after the hour they closed the store, they had a big bag of money to take home for their family. Another person that didn't do like them, they could leave the store open the whole day and sit there and hardly anybody comes into the store. At the end of the day, they have a little bag of money. And another person could open his store for just an hour, and all of a sudden, as soon as the door is open, you have lines of people coming in, and everybody's buying and buying and buying, and he has a big bag of money from an hour. Because a little bit can have a big bracha. You remember the lechem upon him? The challahs in the base of Mikdash? The kohenim got a piece as big as a pea, a little piece, and they ate the little piece, and they got full like a whole suda. Because it had a bracha. Remember on the Teva, the animals and the people? Each one had only a bag of food that Noach put together. He didn't put together so much food. And that bag lasted for the whole year. Because a little bit of food had a big bracha to it. So the same thing needs tzaddikim. One way was to stay up late and not sleep too much and learn a lot. But, you know, for the other tzaddik, he says, if I did that, I wouldn't be able to learn very well, and I wouldn't be able to remember it. So maybe for the one that could stay up, maybe that was a certain way. By him, he needed 8 hours of sleep. And it wasn't a waste of time, because the rest of the time he learned, his mind was rested, he had koyches, and he could learn much better. For him, that was his way to serve Hashem. Which one was better? Which one was right? Which one was wrong? Which way was better? Who was right and who was wrong? Let me see what you say.
The 8-hour tzaddik.
He was better? Why?
Because he understood the Torah more better.
Who else has something to say about this?
Because he had a more koyach. Because the eight one, because he had more time. He gets stronger when he goes and has some sleep.
Did he have more time or less time?
Less, but he had a day.
He had more, maybe more of a bracha.
Yeah, because he had sleep.
Now the thing is like this: the one who did four, maybe for him he could do it. Maybe he could taka do it, but it doesn't mean that the other one could also do like him. Now you have to understand, it doesn't mean one is right, and it doesn't mean one is wrong. It means the way to serve Hashem for the one of 8 hours, that's the way he served Hashem. Could anybody, chas v'shalom, say he's wrong or make fun of him or say that he's not doing good? For him, he needs the 8 hours. Now for the other one, maybe he could taka go for 4 hours and the rest of the time feel koiches and feel good. But it doesn't mean everybody has to be like him. Does everybody, when you walk down the street, does everybody have exactly the same face and look exactly the same? Or everybody has a different face? So the Gemara says, the same way. Now the same way that everybody has a different face and not everybody looks like you and you don't look like somebody else. Each person has a different way to serve Hashem. And it doesn't mean that somebody's way is right and somebody's way is wrong. As long as they're all serving Hashem. The Menorah was burning in the base of Mikdash, and when Mashiach comes, Mirat Hashem will burn again. Was every candle on the right side, or also there were candles on the left side? Was every candle in the middle, or there was also candles on the sides? Was every candle exactly the same, or a little bit different? Now, they're all making light, but they were different places. The same thing, Kinalach. One Yid serves Hashem in one way. As long as he's making lichtik for Hashem, that's his way. Somebody else is doing a different way. It doesn't have to be exactly the same way as the first one. Of course, we're saying they're all keeping Torah mitzvahs. But there's different ways to keep Torah mitzvahs. One person is doing more mitzvahs, going out to help people. One person is more in shul learning Torah, but of course he also does mitzvahs. One person is going around collecting money to help people and collecting tzedakah, and somebody else is always building things, and somebody else goes to the hospitals all the time and he's doing bikur cholim, and somebody else is going around and he's collecting money for people in a different country because they're poor. And somebody else has to be home taking care of his family. They need special things for the family. And he doesn't go out to other people as much because his own kids or his own family needs him. Is one right or was one wrong? One better or not better? Everybody has a different way.